Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 130 of The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer. My co-host Sari Kamen is not in studio today, but she is certainly with us in spirit. In studio, though, is Chef Angus Brown, straight off a plane from Atlanta. He is the chef and co-owner of the Atlanta restaurants Luska and Octopus Bar. Angus, welcome to New York City.
Hello. Glad to be here. Glad to be on the radio.
I'm glad you're here, too. So later in the show, we are going to drop the Morning After quiz bomb on you. This week's topic is Octopussy, the 1983 James Bond film, and you've seen this movie.
I have.
So I'm a little worried. You may be the first one to win the Morning After quiz.
It's been a while.
Okay. 1983 was a little while ago. but first, we like to kick off the show with some food news. So please weigh in on this news if you have any opinions. I'm sure you will, because they're kind of silly topics for sure. So everybody remembers Jared from the Subway campaign. You know, Jared would walk to his local Subway. He would eat only Subway, proving the fact that doctors have told us for many years that exercise and eating right helps you lose weight. Well, there's a gentleman in Alabama who tried to do this. He tried to walk to the Subway and lose weight by eating at the Subway and all of that. But the diet didn't go as planned for him, so he decided to rob four Subways because the diet failed, and he wanted to get his money back.
Nice.
I mean,
that's the way to do it.
I mean, it makes absolutely no sense to me, but I do think that he deserves his money back.
Did he get away with robbing the first three before?
He did. He was actually caught because he was wearing Mario Batali orange shoes in all of the robberies, and someone saw him at a Walmart and was like, "Oh, you totally are this guy, because who wears those shoes?"
Who's in Alabama?
Alabama. Yeah, you're close to Alabama there in Georgia.
Hey, it's next door. It's not too close.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I think anybody who believes that diet is going to work for you is bound to rob something. Another disgruntled customer in the news today. This time, the target is Trader Joe's. So apparently a California man who recently moved to Vancouver was so annoyed that he had to cross the border into Washington every time he wanted to go to the Trader Joe's that he decided to open a shop in Vancouver selling all Trader Joe's products that he had purchased with a slightly higher price markup.
Wow.
Okay, I don't know how things are for you in Atlanta, but the Trader Joe's, any Trader Joe's in New York is absolutely obnoxious because you have to kind of go with a buddy. So the buddy gets in line, and then you do all your shopping, and then you get back in line, and they kind of meet up with you. They have, like, expediters for the lines. They hold signs. Line starts here as they start to, like, snake through the market. Does that happen to you guys at Trader Joe's?
Not really. It hasn't caught on quite yet. I think it's pretty new to Atlanta. There's, like, two of them, and I think it's catching on, though. It is starting to be pretty busy. But I went to a Whole Foods today here in New York and by Union Square, and it was pretty crazy. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh yeah, you can't. Yeah. I mean, you can't. Like, if anybody takes a cart from in the Whole Foods, in that specific Whole Foods, they just anger everyone,
right?
Because you're already, like, trying to scoot by with all the shit you're carrying, and then they are going by with a cart where there's no room for it. So I would certainly be prone to going to this fake Trader Joe's if the line was shorter.
Yeah, I'd like to go there as well. It's stuffed as cheap. They have the $3 chuck there too.
I think it's actually probably $4 chuck, because nice. He raised the prices a little bit. But the fact that he's going and purchasing things and then reselling them across country lines, you would think that he would be stopped, but actually he's won two lawsuits.
No way. Wow.
Trader Joe's is in its third lawsuit with him trying to stop him from doing this. You want to know what they call it?
What's that?
Pirate Joe's.
Really? Is that real?
Yes, yeah, it's real. Wow. It's real. I mean, I don't think that he named it Pirate Joe's, but everyone who buys things from him call it Pirate Joe's. So, pretty good. Well, back to sandwiches, sort of. Hellman's, you know Hellman's?
Yeah.
Mayonnaise? So, I don't know. I grew up in Arizona where we had Best Foods. I feel like it's kind of the same
Same label, same colors, all of that stuff. Yeah.
Bring out the Hellman's and bring out the best. Anyway, so Hellman's, the mayo company, is suing this company called Hampton's Creek. They make vegan mayo. And they claim that Hampton's Creek is ruining mayo for everyone by calling their product just mayo instead of something like vegan Canadian yellow pea sandwich spread or something like that. I'm usually annoyed by the vegans, but in this moment, kind of like, come on, Hellman's.
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised. I saw that yesterday. I was pretty surprised that they went after someone like that, but protecting that mayonnaise money, you know?
I mean, it's got to be a lot of mayonnaise money. Yeah. I just thought Miracle Whip ruined mayonnaise.
Yeah, it's Miracle. I was never got into Miracle Whip. That Tang, I never liked the Tang flavor.
No, exactly. That's not mayonnaise. Yeah, that's not what it tastes
something
like.
Else.
I mean, I'm sorry, but aioli is mayonnaise, and yeah. I think Hellman's ripped it off from them, from France, from Spain, from.
Yeah, I think Hellman's has actually a cool story of like two butcher brothers or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but I don't know.
Maybe that's why it's. Then they got into like a feud, and now they're Best Foods and Hellman's.
Exactly,
and it's that's why it's the same song, but different names. Well, it actually kind of backfired against Hellman's because it was the best day of sales for the Hampton's Creek Just Mayo brand.
Oh, good publicity. Yeah, got their name out there.
I mean, if you want to get vegan A's, go for it. Yeah. Go for it.
I'm going to still stick with Hellman's, though.
I'm with you on that. I'm personally a mustard girl, yeah. but if I'm going to have mayonnaise, I'm going to have straight up mayonnaise. Well, Angus, let's take a break here, and we'll come back with you. This is all the right. Morning After.
The following.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
And we're back here on The Morning After. In 2011, Atlanta-based chefs Angus Brown and Nan Lee opened a late-night restaurant catering to the restaurant industry folks of Atlanta. Octopus Bar is a self-described local eatery meets punk rock fine dining. Their newest restaurant, Luska, opened this spring. Chef Angus Brown, welcome to The Morning After.
Hello, hello.
So I want you to kind of paint the picture for us of the restaurant scene in Atlanta circa 2011 and how Octopus Bar kind of fit into that.
I think 2011 was a pretty good time for Atlanta. And I moved back to Atlanta only planning on being there for 3 or 4 months.
Which it's where you were born.
Yeah, I'm originally from Atlanta and I had been living kind of all over the country and was the chef at a hotel in Florida and kind of decided it, you know, I didn't want to be in Florida anymore and wanted to move around and was planning on moving to New York or Boston and was kind of doing some stages in both places and got a job in Boston and then it didn't open. The executive chef position didn't open for 4 months. So I went back to Atlanta to kind of kill some time and I met Nan, my business partner, I think the second day I was back in town, which was kind of crazy. I kind of walked into his restaurant and started talking about food, and then 3 months or 4 months later, we opened our first restaurant together. octopus bar on the patio of his Vietnamese restaurant on the east side of Atlanta. And Atlanta, I mean, you could kind of feel the energy of the city. It was kind of, you could feel like things were starting to happen, and a lot of farmers and, you know, restaurant people were really kind of coming out, and, you know, people were kind of coming out of the woodwork, and it was started to, you know, you could see that it was about to be thriving. And I think it's really gotten to a place in the last 3 years where it is kind of jumping off, as they say.
They do say that. Absolutely. How do you open a restaurant in four months?
You know, that was the deal. Is Nan realized that I was going to leave. So he was basically like, we started cooking together on Sundays. He had another restaurant in the other side of town in a neighborhood called Castleberry Hills, which is kind of close to downtown Atlanta, and Octopus Bar is in East Atlanta. And, you know, he realized we started cooking on our days off on Sunday, and, you know, people would come in and check us out, and we enjoyed doing it. So he realized for me not to leave that we had to open a place, and the only option was, or the most reasonable option was to open. I don't know if it really sounds too reasonable.
I'm going to say reasonable, maybe not.
You know, he had a patio at his Vietnamese restaurant that was pretty much not being used, and he decided, you know, let's change it a little bit, get some local artists to come and do the walls and stuff like that. And when the Vietnamese restaurant closed at 10, we would open Octopus at 10:30, or still do open. And, it, you know, it's his idea. And I was like, I don't know about getting off work at 5 in the morning. But, you know, it's 3 years later and we're still doing it. And it seemed to work out.
So was there anything like this in Atlanta at the moment? Did you feel? I mean, since you had just gotten there, I mean, sure, Nan had like a little bit of a better idea as to what people in the industry were looking for.
There's a neighborhood, or like there's a street in Atlanta called Buford Highway, which is like, I'd say 15 to 30 minutes outside of downtown Atlanta and East Atlanta and Little Five Points, kind of a lot of neighborhoods where a lot of, you know, restaurant people live and work. And, you know, those were the only places, you know, like Korean barbecue, stuff like that, for someone to go eat, you know, a pretty good meal after they get off work. So that's kind of why we thought it made sense. It's a place for all chefs and, you know, people in the restaurant business, and kind of now everyone goes there. But definitely in the beginning, that's really all that was supporting us.
So you kind of had to rely on your friends.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we kind of opened and just kept our fingers crossed. In the first couple of weeks, no one really came in. And then, you know, the next couple weeks following that, you'd see a few more people every night, and, you know, it would just get busier and busier, and you know, it started to get a lot of good press, and things started happening for us.
Yeah, that's kind of the next question I was going to ask. A late night place is a tall order. There's a lot of places that I know of in New York that open, and they're like, we're going to be doing food till this time, till 2, till 4, and it doesn't take off. There's a couple of places, there's like Blue Ribbon is always going to be packed until 4 in the morning. But that's not everybody. So I guess, yeah, how did you reach out? Was it just the press that was happening?
You know, it was the press and just the city, really. I think the city was ready for it and inside of it. You know, and Nan and I have kind of a relationship where we bounce a lot of ideas off each other. And I think both of us are you know, pretty... have a lot of experience, you know, behind the line and cooking food, and we just seem to really kind of work off each other, and the things that we put out, you know, we kind of stand behind, and we're like each other's best critic, you know. I mean, we criticize each other, and it's been something really good about our relationship, is we're able to work on it rather than, you know, kind of punch each other in the chest or something like that, you know. We take each other's criticism, and we work really well together, and you know, we were kind of the right time, the right place.
So, I guess, when do you get into the restaurant to start to open it up?
So Sob is operating all day, and they open, you know, they're open for lunch and dinner, and Octopus is open late night. So you kind of have to work in the kitchen around them. And Nan, at the time when we opened Octopus, was also cooking at Sob most of the time. So I would come in at 3 o'clock and prep all day, and, you know, kind of like as soon as someone would take something off a burner, you know, I'd sneak in and grab it, and then pretty much
they were like, damn you, Angus.
Yeah, that's really what it is. You're fighting for space, you know. And then as soon as they close, it's on, you know, you just kind of plug in and change the menu completely. And, you know, we wouldn't see it inside, we'd just see it on the patio outside, which is covered, you know, mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a covered patio. And, you know, there was a bar out there already. So that was kind of how it all came together.
So how do you mentally prepare to kind of live in the nighttime? I mean, I know all of us in the restaurant industry do have these late night schedules, but yours is actually even more extreme.
Yeah, it's pretty extreme. You get used to it. I think for a lot of times I was napping a lot during, you know, I would wake up at like 9 or 10 and then shop and do all that kind of stuff I need to do and then go home and sleep for a couple hours and kind of catch sleep where you can. It was definitely demanding, but kind of get addicted to it. You know, it's like I don't really have to be at Octopus Bar every night anymore, but I still find myself there.
Wanting to be there.
Yeah, I moved across the street, you know, so now I live the second house away from there, and I kind of stop in every night and mess around and just make sure everything's all right and hang out, really.
So I'm sure not being there as much has done wonders for your relationships.
that's a hard thing for me.
Well, I understand. I mean, I feel like working those hours are difficult for anyone. So how do you keep, like, mentally sane?
I don't know if I do. that's a good question.
I mean, we've asked hard, before on the show to chefs. This I can't remember his name at the moment, but the chef from Knightwood was here, and you know, it was kind of like, how do you work in this industry and keep your head on and keep your relationships together? And I mean, I think everybody does a little bit of something.
Yeah, you know,
drinking is one of them.
Yeah, drinking, smoking a lot of pot. I try to do things myself, but really, you know, it doesn't feel like work a lot of the times, you mm-hmm. know, especially at a place like Octopus Bar. And our newer restaurant, I'm having a really good time and I love cooking there, but it feels more like work. And the Octopus Bar is such a loud energy there, you know, it's kind of captivating.
It brings you up.
Yeah, it brings you up, you know, and then you're excited to be there. And, you know, I think the patrons the same are excited to be there and excited to eat the food and just kind of try something different. And it's definitely unique.
So new restaurant is Luska, and that opened this spring.
Yeah, it opened April.
In April. Huh. So it's still new, and you're definitely working on a different time frame.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess, how did that concept come up for you guys? You opened this with Nan as well.
Yeah, we opened it together. We really wanted, you know, full-time space, you know, to kind of concentrate and pass Octopus Bar on, which was really hard to kind of find the right person. And if we didn't find the right person, we were gonna shut it down, because we wanted to have a full-time restaurant. We mm-hmm. thought that, you know, of all the things we were doing, you know, we just needed more space and needed kind of something dedicated. And we kind of stay, you know, we cook, we're the same chefs, you know, we cook a lot of the same food, but Octopus Bar, we don't cook as, you know, the hours are different, so you don't cook a lot of spicy food, you don't cook, I mean, as much as we do at Octopus Bar and stuff like that. Things are very different, but it's, it's been cool.
How would you describe the cuisine at Luska? Because I know in reading your bio, you have French technique, you know Italian food, and then Asian cuisine as well.
You know, we get to cook whatever we want, you know, at both places. I think, you know, we try to plan a menu that's cohesive and that makes sense, you know, that isn't kind of all over the place. But, you know, we really get to do, and that's been something that's been really cool to work with Nan, is, you know, we do criticize each other, but we also have kind of an open mind and are able to do whatever we want. And we kind of try to cook the food that we would want to eat. Mm-hmm. And similar with the, you know, the experience of being there, you know, we try to have a place that's the kind of place that you would want to go to, you know, not like a special occasion place or something like that. Something where you can relax and kind of, you know, just like let go and, like, you know, have a good time.
Absolutely. So we're here in the Northeast, but and I have an idea as to, you know, vegetables that are coming in, you know, meat, all these things. What is kind of the local food source that you guys focus on in Atlanta?
You know, the farming, the vegetables in Atlanta, the young farmers in the city are doing a really great job, and, you know, do a good job. And, like, a lot of the farmers markets have only been around, you know, the big farmers markets in the city have only been around for, you know, there's one that is in its first year that's awesome in the middle of the city, Freedom Parkway Farmers Market. And then the other big one has only been around for 3 years. So, you know, these farmers are having an outlet, you know, and it get to meet the chefs at these, you know, farmers markets and stuff like that. And that's kind of the thing for us is, you know, of course, there's not a lot of seafood. We have to get our seafood in from other places and stuff like that. But locally, it's definitely a strong farming community.
So vegetables and...
Yeah, vegetables. And I mean, like recently I got... There's a University of Georgia is funding a caviar, like an aquaponics kind of deal. And it's really cool. The caviar is really good too. You know, it's not mushy. It has like a nice snap to it. And so the sturgeon that they are using for the caviar, you're now able to get. That's something pretty cool that I never thought I'd be buying, you know, in Atlanta from Georgia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Georgia Siberian sturgeon caviar, and, you know, sturgeon.
Locally.
Yeah,
raised.
Locally. But it's, you know, you're just seeing a lot of people really into what they're doing. And, you know, you can kind of see the possibilities. And the cheese in Atlanta is out of control, you know.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, and that's something new. You know, the last 5 years, really, all these dairies and creameries and cheese makers are kind of popping up all over the place. And, you know, it makes sense because we have... You know, great season for great grass and, you know, all that kind of stuff that really makes cheese good.
The so speaking of cheese, you have a pretty killer charcuterie program.
Yeah, absolutely.
At Luska. Tell me about that, because I know in New York, this probably like 4 years ago, it was a really big deal when Il Buco Alimentare actually got a license to make their own charcuterie. That was something that people weren't allowed to do. I mean, right. I know chefs would do it, you know, in like the wine cellar.
Yeah, totally. We still have, just from like old times, we still have a case at my house. That's like, you walk to my house, my living room's like a big charcuterie case. But one of my best friends and closest friends in the world is we went to high school together, and we were always kind of talking about opening a place together. And when we opened Luska, you know, he was a butcher in Boston. He ran Barbara Lynch's program at the butcher shop and for a lot of her restaurants. And when we opened Luska, you know, we were talking a lot about me going up to Boston and us opening up there. And, you know, from all the kind of steam and energy in Atlanta, we wanted to stay down there. So we brought him on, and he is now a partner in the restaurant and leads the charcuterie program. So he was there for the first 6 months of Luska and has come back a couple times to kind of tighten up the program and make sure it's, you know, where he wants to be. But he kind of focuses on a lot of old world salamis and, you know, very classic stuff. And he's also, you know, seen the farming community as, you know, as far as pigs and, you know, all this kind of stuff that he wants to use. It's all around us, you know, mm-hmm. and there's so many farmers that have such great product, you know, and get mangalista pork and, you know, 30 minutes outside of Atlanta is pretty cool.
So the octopus is kind of a through theme for both restaurants. Obviously, one is called Octopus Bar,
yeah.
And then Luska is the name of some mythical octopus,
yeah.
or something like,
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's like a mythical, like, large octopus creature that's, yeah. Just kind of like, made sense, you know? It's I feel like, you know, I don't feel like we're all over the place, but I feel like, you know, we have a lot going on, and we have, you know, a big team and a lot of people that are really good at what they do and kind of have special areas, you know, like Nan is amazing with raw fish, and, you know, Jonathan Salito, the butcher, is, you know, the butcher, and I kind of keep everything together and, you know, write the menu and do all that kind of stuff. So we all kind of have our place. So just, you know, we have our other partner, Jeff, builds the restaurants and do all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we kind of have a good team. So we felt like octopus was, you know, just the right,
because you're
right
all doing
deal.
A lot.
We're all, you know, thinking of the eight arms, and, you know, it's, octopus is cool. It's a cool word. And then, you know, when we were trying to think of the next restaurant, we were, you know, kind of all over the place with names. You know, we were talking about our naming it after our favorite albums and stuff like that. And I talked, you know, for a second, I was thinking Exile in Maine, Rolling Stones, and I was like, Exile kind of sounds like a weird nightclub or something like that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like, that you don't remember leaving.
Yeah, like a Turkish nightclub with hookahs or something. So nothing wrong with that, but it's not who we are. So, you know, just kind of researching the word octopus, I found Luska, and it just seemed right and sounded like a pretty cool name. Though a lot of people call it Lushka and like all sorts of stuff, but, you know.
Of course.
The thing is, I could have been saying it wrong. It's hard. There's not a lot of history on the word, so.
Yeah, you can't, like, Google it and have them pronounce it.
Yeah. They're like, huh?
So What restaurants, I mean, obviously people should check out Luska if they're in Atlanta, but what other restaurants are you really excited about in the state, city?
Yeah, I'm really excited about Staple House, which is about to open kind of in the stages of kind of getting everything together. It's also a nonprofit for the Giving Kitchen, which is really cool. It helps kind of people in the restaurant industry and in the business if they have tragedy or something happened in their life, you know, whether it's, you know, disease or, you know, accident or anything like that. It helps them pay for it. And so Staple House is related to the Giving Kitchen and is kind of one and another. And
so proceeds are going from...
Totally. I mean, the Giving Kitchen, the amount of money that they've raised in Atlanta in the last couple of years has really been beautiful. You know, it's really been cool to see what's happened with, you know, their charity and what they've been doing. And Chef Ryan Smith, who's going to be this chef there, who used to be the chef at Empire State South, which is one of Hugh Atchison's restaurants in Atlanta. He's a beast. You know, he's really kind of... very strong, and you know, I think everyone's really excited to see him. And then there's another chef, David Sweeney, in Atlanta that's kind of in between projects and about to open another place. And the guy is just like, has like the most amazing, he makes simple food so complex, you know, and it's still simple. It's just the small things that he does, you know. It's really kind of mind-bending, you know. I miss eating his food on a regular basis because it's really inspiring to me.
Where can we... find more information about you, about Luska, about Octopus Bar?
You could Google me. our website and you know, all that kind of stuff. And if you're ever in Atlanta, you know, please come see us. You know, we're in both sides of town now, and you know, kind of hopefully can't miss us.
Do you have a Twitter, Instagram?
Yeah, I have Instagram, Angus Octopus Bar, Instagram, and Twitter. I think it's Angus ATL.
Yeah, who does Twitter anyway?
Yeah, I'm actually just getting into Twitter. I just, you know, I don't have that many followers. I kind of like look at it and no one's followed me.
Oh, follow Angus.
Follow me.
Well, let's take
I'll tweet more, I promise.
There you go. Well, let's take a break here on The Morning After, and we will come back with the Morning After quiz. We're back here on The Morning After. We've been speaking with Angus Brown of Octopus Bar and Luska in Atlanta. Are you ready for The Morning After quiz, Angus?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, Angus Brown, we know you know about your bar and restaurant, Octopus Bar, but what do you know about the 1983 James Bond film, Octopussy? Prepare for The Morning After quiz. All right. Three questions, all multiple choice, no pressure. But you could be the first one to win because you've seen this movie. I've never seen this movie.
I think it's been 15 years or something.
Okay, all right. So maybe time is on our side. Yeah, time is on our side. All right, question one. In the opening scene of Octopussy, Agent 009 is found murdered dressed as what? Is it A, an octopus? Is it B, a clown? Or is it C, a Soviet spy?
I'm going to have to go with C on that one.
See, a Soviet spy is not correct.
Oh.
It is actually a clown holding a Fabergé egg.
Yeah.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. This, so, I mean, it is about...
Re-watch it.
It is about Soviet spies, like, throughout the whole film, which is why you probably said that. But, no, 009 was dressed as a clown carrying a Fabergé egg. All right, question two. Octopussy is a sultry jewel thief who lives on her own floating circus palace in the ocean. How did she get her name? Is it A, her father studied octopi, hence the nickname? Is it B, her circus act involves dances with octopi? Or is it C, she has stolen a blue diamond encrusted octopus crown from an auction in London?
B.
B, her circus act involved dances with octopus. That would be amazing. Yeah. And I would definitely see this movie, but that's not correct. Actually, her father studied octopi, so hence naming, giving a nickname to his daughter, Octopussy. Like, really? I know her name is like Octavia or something like that, but that makes no sense. Absolutely no sense.
Octopussy is a great name for your daughter.
It's such a great nickname for your daughter. Absolutely. All right. Question three. Come on, Angus. All right. You got this All one. Right. All right. Bond is captured by exiled Afghani prince and villain Kamal Khan, but is able to escape after beating Khan at what game of skill? Is it A, backgammon? B, underwater charades? Or C, chess?
Chess.
Are you sure you want to say chess?
Chess or backgammon?
Chess or backgammon is not an option. Wow. Which one is it?
I'm going to go with chess.
You're going to go with chess. Yeah. All right. You say C, chess. No, it is actually backgammon. Wow. Angus, you have so many other talents, and we know that.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You're going to rewatch this film, and you're going to be like,
I'm going to kill it.
Wikipedia was totally wrong.
I want another quiz after I rewatch it.
I'll find you another quiz, I promise. Right. I'll make you one. I promise. Thank you so much for coming on The Morning After and being a good sport with the quiz.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
If anybody's in Atlanta, check out his restaurants, Octopus Bar and Luska. I know I certainly will. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.